From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Today on the program, Springfield's Pride Fest was this past weekend. We were there talking with people in the LGBTQ community and their allies about what Pride means to them this year. Plus, the singer-songwriter Tomberlin was raised in central Illinois. We'll talk with her and hear her music. That's all coming up later this hour. But first, we're 5 weeks away from Illinois' primary election. There are contested races for governor and other statewide constitutional officers like Secretary of State. At the federal level, U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth is up for re-election, and of course every seat in the U.S. House. Plus there's the entire Illinois General Assembly and judges at all levels, including two seats on the Illinois Supreme Court. And on top of all that, several thousand political talking points were negated last week as the Census Bureau said oopsie on the 2020 count and reported Illinois actually gained population in the last decade. Joining me to talk about all this are two veteran reporters on Illinois government and politics. Dan Petrella covers state government for the Chicago Tribune. Dan, always good to have you on.
Good to be here, Brian.
And Amanda Vinicky is a correspondent with public television station WTTW. You can see her reports on Chicago Tonight. Amanda, welcome back.
It is my pleasure, Brian.
So, Dan, I'm going to begin with you because last week we had reportedly the first face-to-face meeting, at least that I know of, among the men seeking the GOP nomination for governor. You were in the room. Set the scene for us.
Yes, there was a editorial board meeting, which is, I should say, separate from the operations of our newsroom at the Tribune, but all six of the candidates seeking the Republican nomination for governor were in a small conference room at the Freedom Center in Chicago, where we now run our news operation. And they really went after Richard Ervin, the mayor of Aurora, who is seen by many as the front runner in the race. You know, it started off with seeming like it was going to be sort of a bruising session. Things kind of calmed down a little bit after that. But what was interesting to me is that, you know, there's little, at least, about what they're willing to say on the issues that really separates these candidates from one another, which is why we've seen a campaign that really has focused on issues like who maybe has voted for a Democratic candidate in the past, or, you know, who did or didn't vote for Donald Trump in previous elections. It's been a very fascinating and muddy race so far.
Not a lot of discussion of like the finer points of income tax policy or anything like that.
We did get into pensions for a little while, and there were maybe some nuances here and there on that issue. But you know, for the most part, there's really, you know, a lot of it is policies that go back to what former Republican Governor Bruce Rauner supported in a lot of different ways. I would say one way that they are different from him is that they are all bill themselves as pro-life candidates. But aside from that, you know, not much daylight on many, many issues.
Yeah, but certainly daylight on the amount of ad money they have to spend on the airwaves. You know, this was one of the few times I think the candidates are going to be together, right, Dan? There's a televised debate this week, but not everyone is expected to show up.
That's right. WGN-TV and NBC5 here in Chicago are actually each hosting a Republican gubernatorial debate on Tuesday evening, about an hour apart from one another. And Richard Ervin, the aforementioned mayor of Aurora, will be at the NBC5 debate. And then the others, the other sort of top tier candidates, for lack of a better term, Jesse Sullivan of Petersburg, Darren Bailey of Zinnia, and Gary Rabine of Bull Valley will be at the WGN debate, which is an hour later.
So strange.
I will say, Brian, yeah, there was actually a Zoom press conference a debate held by the Daily Herald via Zoom, or at least an editorial board meeting, less than a debate, although it sure as heck sounded like a debate. I imagine I was not in the room where it happened, in the Chicago Tribune editorial board meeting where they first met, but I did watch the Daily Herald Zoom, and I imagine it was somewhat similar, where really it was not a lot of nuanced policy discussions, a little bit of that here and there. Some of it, I would say, for example, I want one of the candidates Max Salomon, who is really far behind in the polls, but, you know, wants a constitutional amendment to be able to reduce pension benefits, something that there's clearly really no appetite in the General Assembly for that to happen. I mean, that was as like policy wonky as it got. Really, a lot of it was barbs back and forth about Trump policies, about there was back and forth about property taxes in Aurora and some development there, but you could tell even over Zoom, these men were throwing darts at one another, as I suppose I would be too if I had been the subject of some of these campaign ads and brochures.
You know, Amanda, I know every election is different and President Trump is not going to be on the ballot or in office for the first time in three major election cycles, but Democrats have basically won, you know, 55 to 40, give or take, in Illinois in recent years. How are these candidates, are you hearing something from these candidates about how they're going to overcome that sort of past is prologue sort of thing?
It seems to be. So, for example, you look at Darren Bailey and his stance on Chicago has certainly been a shift. He was one of the legislators who was looking to separate Illinois versus Chicago. And now he says that was more of a warning sign and he loves the city and he and his wife are here all the time and hang out on Michigan Avenue. So it certainly is a different sort of tenor, even though he's very much still the Mr. Downstate guy. So in that regard, I would say it seems to be a recognition of needing a wider base were he to go in the general election. But candidates, when asked about that, you know, some of the more conservative candidates seem to brush that off and say they have a vision. They think it's what people want. They have faith that their faith-based message is one that will resonate. That's, I think, also very clearly why you see Richard Ervin walking the tightrope and not wanting to say much about Trump. When he says that's what J.B. Pritzker wants us to be talking about, frankly, he's right. Because if Trump is very popular among those who are apt to come out in the GOP primary and vote, less popular with the general public of Illinois, who you're going to have the majority of votes from in order to win the general election. And so it's clearly a calculation. I would say it's as a reporter, I believe Donald Trump changed the tenor of the presidency. His policies are certainly worth scrutinizing and asking candidates about. And at the same time, I will say it is sort of discouraging as a reporter when you have candidates who are not all that available, particularly Ervin, and instead of getting into any sort of policy issues, it is very, you know, DC focused. And so it's been, I think in that regard, sort of a frustrating campaign to cover as somebody who, of course, cares about the state of Illinois. And I believe that voters do as well. I'm not sure how much of that we're getting in either capacity.
All right. We're speaking with Amanda Vinicky of Chicago Tonight on WTTW and Dan Petrella of the Chicago Tribune, sort of a Monday morning politics roundtable. Dan, what about you? Has this race been frustrating to cover in terms of access to the candidates?
You know, it's been interesting. I will say I agree with Amanda that the Ervin campaign has not done a very good job of getting him out there and answering questions from reporters, and it hasn't gone particularly well when they have done that. I thought it was interesting.
Or maybe not having him out there is doing a good job from their perspective, right?
Well, that may be, you know, and it was interesting. They did some stops up here in the suburbs. They've been stopping a bunch of different places around the state over the past few days, but the ones in the suburbs were on a Saturday when maybe most people aren't paying attention. I know some people did cover the stop. You know, it's one thing that struck me, and Amanda touched on it a little bit, but in order to win statewide, these candidates are going to have to appeal to voters in the suburbs of Chicago, because that's really where statewide elections are decided these days. The suburbs have been trending more Democratic. Be interesting to see if that carries out this year when we get to the fall election. But all the candidates are trying to make the case that they can win against Pritzker, particularly in the suburbs, while at the same time trying to appeal to the conservative base of the Republican Party, which I think is a really, really hard thing to do. In the Tribune editorial board session, Jesse Sullivan in particular went after Darren Bailey and talked about how he couldn't win, you know, in the suburbs. But then we've seen Sullivan tacking pretty hard to the right in laying out his education platform and other things in recent days. So it's really kind of going to be interesting to see who emerges from this and how they try to tack back toward the middle when they're up against Pritzker for the general election.
Dan, before we move off the gubernatorial campaign, I do want to mention some of your colleagues last week published a story that began, Aurora Mayor Richard Ervin, who's now running for Illinois governor, arrived last year at the scene of an arrest by Aurora police in which his then-girlfriend was accused of hitting a security guard at a marijuana store. Ervin, as we've said, as polling has shown, is up. The most recent poll, I think, had him 4 or 5 points over Darren Bailey. What happened next in this story?
Well, Mayor Ervin arrived, and when in the course of sort of dealing with the situation, was talking on the phone and then also told his then girlfriend, according to the police report, that the issue would be taken care of. The officer interpreted that as one might. Mayor Ervin later claims that what he was saying is that it would be taken care of in the court system, that she would get a lawyer and things would go from there. What ended up happening is that she was charged with a local ordinance violation rather than a state misdemeanor. And what's interesting also about Irvin's defense in this is that he basically says, you know, the police got it wrong in their police report, which kind of goes right against his efforts in the campaign to position himself as the pro-police candidate.
He was wearing one of those little thin blue line lapel pins during the Tribune Forum, right?
Yes. Yeah. The, you know, the back the blue, all lives matter, tough on crime prosecutor image of himself that he's put out there in his campaign commercials backed by the richest person in the state. You know, it kind of doesn't jibe with this issue here when he is dealing with the local police in his own city and questioning their police work and what was written in the official report. Not to say that police always get it right 100% of the time, but it kind of creates some tension with the campaign narrative.
Amanda, although briefly, interestingly, yeah, he has gotten the endorsement of both the Aurora and Chicago FOP. Not the only one. There have been some statewide organizations that I believe endorsed other candidates. Sullivan.
Yes, well, that's right. The blue are definitely backing him.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure this is not the last conversation we're going to have on the gubernatorial campaign in the next 5 weeks and one day leading into the primary election. By the way, as we said on the show last week, early voting is open in most of Illinois. I think in Chicago it got delayed to deal with some issues, but most of Illinois, you can cast your ballot now if you wish to. In the few minutes we have remaining, Amanda, one of the talking points we've heard a lot, particularly from Republicans in Illinois in recent years, is that we are losing population to the Sun Belt, where taxes are lower. But actually, there was a story last week about how Illinois gained population. What happened with the Census Bureau?
Well, this is something that is frequently done. You have post-enumeration surveys every time after the once-in-a-decade census, and Illinois is not alone. We're among various states where the calculations were really pretty darn off. 14 states, in fact, had what was characterized actually in a report on NPR as, quote, significant miscounts. In Illinois' case, that was favorable. And so now the question is trying to get federal dollars that match that, because it's one of the many reasons Illinois did put a lot of money and attention into getting as high a census turnout as possible, because the more people you have, the more resources are sent your way. So I think that we're still sort of figuring that out. The census hasn't given an explanation really for what happened, other than that, yes, there's a reason they do these post-enumeration surveys, and that's because numbers do change, and some of these are estimates based on folks who don't fill out the survey and what have you. So we're going to see if Illinois does get any additional money back. It does not change anything in terms of giving the state additional representation in Congress. So I would say it is certainly something to celebrate, that narrative of hemorrhaging population, not accurate. That said, there are certainly other states that are gaining population in far greater numbers than is Illinois, which is why you're seeing the state lose representation in Congress. And even in the next decade, like early predictions, unless something changes, are that will happen again, that's a far way out, but that's the way things are looking.
And Dan, briefly, even though Illinois is now shown to have gained population, because this was like a survey or statistical sampling, it can't be used for redistricting, right? We're not going to see the number of congressional seats go back up in Illinois.
That's right. We will have 17 regardless. And you know, some of the states that were also undercounted were other large states like Texas that are gaining seats in redistricting. So even if it, you know, they were to adjust, it's unclear to me, at least, you know, that we even would gain a seat if that were a possibility. You know, I think you know, it does counter that narrative. It also raises questions. Those narratives were largely based on yearly census estimates that are put out. So it's, you know, I think going to take some study to figure out what's been happening with those census projections over the past decade that have shown that outmigration.
Yeah, census estimates, and of course the ever perennial story about moving company trucks leaving Illinois. But we'll talk about
you
that another time.
You up to?
Yeah, right. All right. Dan Petrella of the Chicago Tribune, Amanda Vinicky of WTTW's Chicago Tonight. Great to talk with you as always. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
More to come after a short break. You're listening to the 21st Show. Do stay with us.